Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 24th. City official highlights produced water. Director slated to co-chair panel says byproduct could be a game changer. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The director of utilities for the city of Midland believes produced water could be a game changer for West Texas. Carl Crago told the Reporter Telegram it is still a long shot, but that there are millions of barrels of produced water going into the saltwater disposal wells that could be used for other purposes. The Reporter Telegram has previously reported that roughly 4 barrels of water are used for every 1 barrel of oil produced. Crago will have a chance to be part of a solution. He has accepted the role of co-chair of the Standards Subcommittee of the newly formed Texas Produced Water Consortium, hosted by Texas Tech University. This committee will develop recommendations for water quality specifications, as well as any associated permitting and testing standards necessary to beneficially reuse produced water. Crago estimated that around 10% of produced water is currently recycled. He says that is expensive, but the oil industry and others want to increase that percentage. There is too much water that could be used for irrigation, drinking, or aquifer recharging, he said. Quote, introducing that water would fill lakes if you can figure out how to do it, Crago said. The Texas Produced Water Consortium was created in 2021 through Senate Bill 601 of the 87th Texas Legislative Session to bring together information resources to study the economics of, technology related to, and environmental and public health consideration for beneficial uses of produced water from oil and gas operations, according to a city press release. Crago noted there are currently pilot studies taking place that the industry is investigating options on what else could be done with produced water other than forcing it down a disposal well. He said the Colorado School of Mines, West Texas A&M, and Texas Tech University are all studying the issue. Quote, the rush is on how to do it economically where people can afford to do it, Crago said. Last week, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton mentioned how the city of Midland, in partnership with private business, is on the cusp of historical achievements when it comes to the handling of produced water. Quote, if some things happen that we think might happen, it will literally make history when it comes to water, Payton said during his re-election campaign announcement. Continuing the quote, there's some amazing things that can happen when our water resources are good for the next 75 to 100 years, but some things are happening related to the oil field that will be historical for the globe, end quote. Crago also said it is, quote, staggering how much water is coming out of the ground that can't be used, but even if it takes another decade, it would be worth the effort. One day of produced water is about half a year of water in the city of Midland, maybe 2 days of produced water, Crago said. Cudd avoids jail time for riot. Judge rejects DOJ recommendation in favor of probation. Jenny Cudd was sentenced to 2 months of probation and a $5,000 fine for her role in the riots at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, according to a report from television station WUSA 9. A reporter there said that U.S. District Court Judge Trevor McFadden rejected the recommendation from the Department of Justice that Cudd be sentenced to 75 days in jail. Quote, Judge McFadden said he was concerned by Jenny Cudd's statements about bloodshed and revolution, but he saw her treatment as disparate from defendants in the Portland riots and protesters during the Kavanaugh hearings, according to Jordan Fisher, investigative reporter for WUSA 9. Fisher also reported a statement from Cudd prior to sentencing that blamed the violence on January 6th on bad actors and that she enjoyed the support of her community. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton was among the Midlanders who supported the former mayoral candidate and owner of Becky's Flowers. Another supporter apparently was Cowboys for Trump founder Coy Griffin, who tweeted, quote, "On the plane back to New Mexico, Jenny Cudd is a great person," on his Twitter account just moments after the judge's ruling. The tweet accompanied a picture of Cudd and himself. Griffin on Tuesday was found guilty of one count of entering a restricted area on January 6th, but not guilty on a second count of disorderly conduct, according to Fisher. U.S. attorneys had attempted Tuesday to file for a continuance, quote, "based on defendant's repudiation of an element of the offense," end quote. Specifically, quote, "it is the government's position that the defendant has repudiated an element of the offense through statements reflected in the pre-sentence investigation report and made in her sentencing memorandum," according to the motion filed. Cudd's attorney, Marina Medvin of Alexandria, Virginia, filed an objection to the notice of a continuance request. She indicated that the continuance was to determine, quote, "what steps, if any, are appropriate based on Cudd's statement on March 10th to a probation officer, during which, among other things, she acknowledged her actions." The word tepidly was used to describe, by U.S. attorneys, their reaction to her avowal of responsibility. However, during subsequent conversations over nearly 2 weeks, no concern was voiced, Medvin declared. In October, Cudd pleaded guilty to one misdemeanor charge related to her participation in riots at the U.S. Capitol building as part of a plea deal with the federal government. Cudd pleaded guilty to entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds. In exchange for the guilty plea, the U.S. Attorney's Office agreed to drop four other charges against her, including a felony obstruction charge. Hospital reports no COVID inpatients. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. For the first time in more than 2 years, Midland Memorial Hospital can report having no inpatients with cases of COVID. Midland Health reported Wednesday morning in its daily report that the only COVID inpatient was convalescing or recovering health and strength over a period of time after having COVID. By the afternoon, that convalescing patient was no longer part of the MMH census. Quote, "The last time we had zero known active cases at MMH was on March 18, 2020, a Midland Memorial Hospital spokesperson told the Reporter-Telegram. On Wednesday, Midland Health reported 192 of its 248 rooms were occupied. It also reported 8 of 200 people, or 4%, tested at Midland Health testing centers were positive for COVID last week. MOSC announces its tuning up for the future with a new name. Director says, switch to West Texas Symphony Honoring Mission. Starting July 1st, the Midland-Odessa Symphony and Chorale will be known as West Texas Symphony. The announcement comes in anticipation of the symphony's 60th season celebration. Executive Director Ethan Wills explained in a press release, quote, "This recommitment was brought forth through an analysis demanded in our strategic plan, started in 2019. As a nonprofit organization, we have a responsibility to constantly reevaluate our strategies toward growth and preservation. Following the blessing of a particularly enduring 58th season in 2020-2021, it was time for us to reevaluate who we are and who we now serve. And given the additional opportunity of an important 60th season milestone, our board moved forward with evaluation and subsequently made a decision that honored our mission, end quote. The mission of the symphony is to enhance the quality of life in West Texas through professional music performances and music education, according to a press release. The organization hired a Texas-based firm to develop a dynamic new logo. Quote, "A great deal of brainstorming, research, thoughtfulness, and attention to detail went into this project," MOSC stated in the release. The new logo features a wave design representative of a five-line music staff and the West Texas Winds. The center line of the wave is indicative of an F-hole on a string instrument, while also paying homage to the connectivity of two cities. The cascading colors represent the famous West Texas sunsets, and the dark blue font retains the color palette currently used in the MOSC logo. MOSC held a rollout event before their March 19th concert, revealing the name change, new logo design, and a sneak peek of next season to a group of sponsors, donors, and media. Quote, "We received the warmest remarks at the rollout event," MOSC reported. "Our patrons and supporters are phenomenal. They understand that this is just one innovative step, not the only step, toward a new tier of artistic excellence. It reflects a renewed commitment to our community. It elevates our organization to reflect our broadening influence, and it positions us toward the brightest future of serving our patrons, musicians, and programs," end quote. The organizational structure will remain the same, providing a large symphony orchestra performing 8 main stage concerts at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, an adult chorale, youth choir, and 3 chamber ensembles, brass, woodwinds, and strings, according to the release. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, March 24th. Patricia Ann Peters-Hodges, age 69, of San Antonio, Texas, passed away on Sunday, March 20th. Patricia was born October 17th, 1952. A public visitation for Patricia will be held Thursday, March 24th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church, 1906 West Texas Avenue in Midland. A funeral mass will occur Friday, March 25th, at 12 noon at St. Anne's Catholic Church, 1906 West Texas Avenue in Midland. A mass of Christian burial will occur Friday, March 25th, at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com for the Hodges family. Sherry Lynn Lloyd Parker died February 12th. Memorial set for March 26th at Ellis Funeral Home, Midland, at 2 p.m.
Good morning. This is Kim. I am reading The Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, March 24th, 2022. Board okays proposed new high school site. New school won't be built without passage of May bond issue. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees approved 100 acres of district-owned land at Yukon Avenue and Fadre Road as a location for a new high school. But it is all contingent on the passage of a May bond election. The motion was made Tuesday by Trustee Chris Stanley and seconded by Donna Smith. The high school would be built there if the high school proposition of a $398,255,000 bond passes. Proposition B for $183 million would go for a new comprehensive high school. the high school would have a 2,500 to 2,800 student capacity and enclose an estimated 400,000 square feet. It would include furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Proposition A for $215,255,000 would include maintenance and lifecycle repairs, replacement for school district buildings. $130,255,000, construction of a new career and technical education center for $70 million, and classroom technology upgrades for $15 million. The high school site is Northeast Midland and is across from Parks Bell Ranch, Superintendent Scott Murray said. The land was purchased in September 2015 for a little more than $2 million. Murray said there are currently 5,000 families living in Parks Bell Ranch. Eventually, the high school would be surrounded by the Parks Bell Ranch development. Executive Director of District Operations Courtney Smith said high school students are projected to live in the northeast part of the district. Board Member Delma Avalos said they know Odessa High School is growing and is now larger than Permian High School. What we need to clarify is that we have land that is already paid for. That doesn't mean we don't need another high school. We do. I want to make sure people understand we know there's growth in West Odessa and we need another high school, Avalos said. Murray said the challenge from a bond perspective is the tolerance level of the community. The community was clear the bond had to be under $400 million. It is recommended that a high school be built on 75 to 100 acres. Murray said ECISD doesn't own any other vacant property that size. The projected cost is $183 million. The purchase of land was not built into the high school cost, but it was for the Career and Technical Center. Murray said 40 to 50 acres would be needed for a CTE center. He said it takes about 2 years to build a high school. If the bond passes, the district would start selecting architects and engineers. They would also have to sell the bond. Summer 2023 would be the first time a shovel would be put in the ground and ECISD to open in summer 2025. The ECISD website details that district leaders anticipate the bond would create a tax rate increase of 15 cents and for a home with a taxable value of $100,000 would equate to a tax increase of about $12 per month. There would be no tax increase on resident homesteads for taxpayers 65 and older, as state law dictates that the tax rate and the amount paid on a residence are frozen when that person turns 65 years old, applies for the exemption, and is approved by the Ector County Appraisal District. ECISD gives local taxpayers a 20% homestead exemption, which is the maximum allowed by law. The board also heard a report on schools of choice. The district currently has 13 choice schools. 9 of those are full choice. They have no school attendance zones. And 4 are a hybrid neighborhood choice campus, the board recapped detailed. About 4,500 students, or 15% of ECISD student body, attends these schools. During this review, ECISD asked parents and community to offer suggestions for future choice school programs themes. A couple of the key elements of the survey responses: the community sees technology programs, preparing kids for the future, and project-based learning as important. Parents also want to see more options for middle school students and high school students. Several projects already in the works will address these concerns. A partnership that will bring the UTPB STEM Academy to ECISD, an international baccalaureate middle years program, and a project-based learning model. Long-term opportunities under consideration are shifting the program focus to low-interest elementary schools, launching a fellowship or training program for leaders to assist with the design of future choice experiences and then lead those programs and to possibly expand Austin Montessori to PK through 8. Receive an update on the Gifted and Talented program. District leaders formed an advisory committee of parents, teachers, GT teachers, principals, and administrators, surveyed other school districts, surveyed ECISD parents, and surveyed ECISD teachers. The committee found 24 of 25 school districts surveyed provide GT services through inclusive daily classroom and partial day pullouts, average 100 minutes per week. Teachers at all levels understand the importance of differentiating instruction for GT students, and they need more opportunities to work with certified GT staff and need more information on recognizing and meeting the needs of gifted students, the recap said. Parents want gifted students to be given chances to work with other gifted students. Do not see that gifted students are provided learning experiences different from other students and would like to attend parent meetings to learn more about giftedness. The Advanced Academics Department is redesigning GT services with more professional learning, strong curriculum, more family and community involvement work. In the classroom, GT services will look this way. Kindergarten through second grade is an inclusive setting supported by a certified specialist. 3 through 5 pull out for 2 hours per week. Middle school students will be served in their honors classes supported by a certified specialist. High school students will be served in honors, AP, IB, and career and technical education classes supported by a certified specialist. Reviewed winter 2022 MAP assessment scores. MAP stands for Measure of Academic Progress. These assessments, which are given 3 times per year, measure what students know and what they're ready to learn next. MAP growth measures performance, whether a student performs on, above, or below grade level over time. This report compares to the report from 1 year ago, winter 2021. In reading, the recap said, growth has seen apparent in nearly all grade levels, with kindergarten, third grade, and sixth grade all hitting or surpassing projected gains. In math, it said, results are similar to kindergarten, second, third, fourth, and fifth grades, meeting or exceeding projected gains. A few areas fell below expectations. However, student achievement is growing in both reading and math across grade levels, especially in kindergarten, where children are benefiting from the full-day kindergarten program implemented last year. The data also shows a very clear picture that regular school attendance directly correlates to higher academic achievement. In a look at subgroups of students, the largest growth took place among gifted, talented students. Growth in math is more rapid than reading among all subgroups. ECISD uses MAP assessments in kindergarten through 8th grade, reading and math, English 1 and 2 language, and Algebra 1. More areas will be added. MAP growth is one of the measurements the school board uses as an indicator of success, the recap said. Reviewed the renewal plan of ECISD's District of Innovation Plan. ECISD originally applied for and received District of Innovation DOI status in 2017. The current DOI committee used the strategic plan finalized in 2019 and indicators of success to keep the plan focused on district priorities. The DOI committee consisted of 22 people, including teachers, parents, and one community member. The 5-year plan will be presented again to trustees at next week's meeting for approval. Man convicted of aggravated sexual assault of a child sentenced to life in prison. After deliberating less than 15 minutes, an Ector County jury Wednesday found an Odessa man guilty of repeatedly raping a little girl during a 3-year period. Gary Landreth, 65, was convicted of 4 counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child and 1 count each of continuous sexual abuse of a child and human trafficking. It took a jury less than 10 minutes to give Landreth 6 life sentences. He could have received from 25 to 99 years on 5 of the counts and 5 to 99 years on the human trafficking count. Judge Den Wallen of the 70th District Court opted to run 4 of the sentences consecutive to one another. The other 2 will run concurrently. Landreth and the child's mother, Shirley Harmon, were arrested in January 2019 after the then 5-year-old girl told investigators for the second time in 2 years that she'd been repeatedly sexually assaulted by Landreth. Investigators didn't have enough evidence to arrest Landreth in 2017, but they arrested him in 2019 when a physical examination revealed the girl had been repeatedly raped and sodomized. They arrested Harmon because she'd admitted to accepting money from Landreth so he could have access to the girl. Landreth testified Wednesday morning he met Harmon through her mother, Nancy Blaylock, at church. Within a matter of weeks, Landreth said he began babysitting Harmon's infant son, and within a matter of months, Harmon, the boy, and the boy's father had moved in with him. The original arrangement was for Harmon and the boyfriend to pay him $300 a month, but when the boyfriend eventually moved out following the birth of Harmon's daughter by another man, he allowed them to stay rent-free, Landreth said. Eventually, Harmon had a 3rd child, and she and that child's father moved out, but the 2 older children continued to spend 80% of their time with him, although they'd visit their mother and grandmother occasionally, Landreth said. He supported the children using money from his disability check and rent from people who lived in other homes on his property, Landreth said. Their mother provided some of the food for her children using food stamps. Landreth testified that although he was once married, he and his much older wife were unable to produce any children. Since he'd never had relations with other women, he was childless and loved to babysit. Years earlier, he said he'd informally adopted a 12-year-old and raised him for 5 years. The native Odessan told jurors he would never have sex with young children because it would kill them. He also explained he believes young girls have a barrier that is broken during their first sexual experience, and he wouldn't want to disappoint anyone who would be expecting a virgin on their wedding night. He had no explanation for why the girl showed such traumatic injuries, but he said he knows for a fact he wasn't responsible. Landreth told jurors he believes Harmon's mother coached the girl to say he sexually assaulted her because Blaylock was angry at him because she believed he was interfering with her relationship with the girl and her older brother. Blaylock was continually trying to interfere in his relationship with the children, Landreth said. I told Shirley I'd give her $200 a month to keep her mother out of our business, Landreth testified. He insisted he did not give Harmon money to have sex with the girl. Why would I pay for something I can get free access to the entirety of their whole lives? Landreth said. Assistant Ector County District Attorneys Ricky Ernest and Courtney Williams said the evidence clearly shows Landreth was guilty and reminded them of the many statements the girl gave forensic interviewers, the diagram she drew, and her injuries. Defense attorney Michael McLeish said there's no doubt the girl was the victim of horrendous abuse, but the question is whether Landreth committed it. He pointed out that following the 2017 investigation, the lead detective on the case wrote in his report that he thought the girl had been coached on what to say. McLeish asked the jury if it was possible she was coached again in 2019. He loved that little girl. He loved that little boy. He gave them a home, some place to live, and somehow that's been perverted into the situation he's in, McLeish said. They could well send an innocent man to prison, McLeish said. How many times does the girl have to say, Gary, 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 Gary? Is it 10 times? Is it 100 times? Williams asked. She was not coached. She was not confused. She said it again and again. The girl clearly did not Google sex acts so she could imitate them during her forensic interviews, and she didn't consciously decide to exhibit highly sexual behavior during the interviews either, Williams said. Gary was right when he said he'd only been with one woman because the other person he's been with was that little girl, Williams said, pointing to a picture of the child. She was telling the truth in 2017, and she was telling the truth in 2019, Williams said. Believe the evidence because it's the truth, Williams urged the jury. Harmon, 40, pleaded guilty to the abandonment, endangerment charge and agreed to testify against Landreth in exchange for having two other charges dismissed, continuous sexual assault of a child and human trafficking. Harmon gave contradictory testimony to Williams and McLeish about the $400 she said she received from Landreth. She said the money was just for the kids to go over there, but she also said the money was so Landreth could have sex with her daughter. Sexual assault nurse examiners Taylor Whitley and Lisa Montoya testified Tuesday the injuries sustained by the child were among the worst they've ever seen, could not have been the result of childhood accidents. During the sentencing portion of the trial, the girl's adoptive mother, Jennifer Mishler, testified that when she first began fostering her, she had no sense of identity. She had no opinion, no likes or dislikes, and no creativity. She couldn't be alone, couldn't process or express her emotions, and would often scream and break things. A therapist worked for months with the girl on a book describing the abuse and her earlier life. Once finished, the girl had the option of reading it to her new parents or destroying it, Mishler said. The girl opted to destroy it and to begin her life anew. Nowadays, the girl is a straight-A student, loves to sing, has lots of friends, and is doted on by her new grandparents and cousins, Mishler said. She's also a fantastic big sister to the foster children they continue to take in. In asking for the life sentences, Williams said, it would not only send a message to the community and Landreth, but it would send a message to the girl as to her worth. One day, she'll get curious as to what happened to the man who raped her, and she'll read about it on the internet, Williams said. McLeish told the jurors to do what you will, since whether Landreth receives 25 or 50 years or life, he'll die in prison. Quick Hits Arts Festival. The Odessa College Department of Visual and Performing Arts presents the first iteration of the Spring Exhibition Art Revival, SEAR Festival, Friday in the Globe Theater at the OC Main Campus. The SEAR Festival will feature local artists from the Odessa area and is produced in collaboration with Odessa Arts. Doors will open at 6:30 p.m., with an exhibition gallery containing original creative works by both faculty and student artists in a variety of mediums. Following the gallery, the OC Music and OC Theater departments will present a live collaborative performance beginning at 7:30 p.m. This showcase will feature selections by the OC Vocal Ensemble and the world premiere of three original one-act plays. Admission is free. Jimmy Buffett. Tickets for the May 5th Jimmy Buffett concert at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday. Groundbreaking ceremony. The City of Odessa and Odessa Parks Foundation has scheduled a groundbreaking ceremony for a new playground at Casa Bella Park. The ceremony will be 1 p.m. Monday at Casa Bella Park, located near the intersection of Maple Avenue and University Boulevard. The playground project and design was assisted by students from ECISD, and students will join the groundbreaking. Free AARP tax aid. AARP is offering free tax assistance to seniors by appointment through April 12th at the Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue. masks are required. To schedule an appointment, call 432-337-5281. FCC Affordable Connectivity Event. The Federal Communications Commission, Excess Telecom City and County of Andrews will be providing a tablet with one-year internet connectivity to Andrews County residents who qualify from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. today at Andrews Business and Technology, 201 Northwest Andrews D, Andrews. Connection fee is $20. Qualifications. Recipients of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP food stamps, Medicaid, Supplemental Security Income, SSI, Federal Public Housing Assistance, Veterans and Survivors Pension Benefit, income that is at or below 200% of the federal poverty level of $25,000, students on federal Pell Grant, children who participate in the National School Lunch Program or the School Breakfast Program, including through the USDA Community Eligibility Provision, Title I, participants in tribal-specific programs such as Bureau of Indian Affairs General Assistance, Tribal TANF, or Food Distribution Program on Indian Reservations, elderly on Social Security. Please bring supporting documents. For more information, call Gloria G. Apollinario at 432-349-0522. National Quilt Month Film Series. The Alan Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled National Quilt Month Film Series at 6 p.m. Thursdays. Today, Visa Butler Quilt Portraits, G's Bend Quilters. March 31st, Ken Burns Quilt Collection. There will be short videos of famous quilt artists, quilt events, and quilt collections. Admission is free. For more information, visit noelartmuseum.org. Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series. Midland College has scheduled an installment of the Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series featuring aspiring rock star turned rocket scientist Adam Stelzner and real-life guardian of the galaxy Dr. Mugega Moo Cooper at 7 p.m. today at the AIG Langford Chaparral Center on the MC campus, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland. Stelzner is the chief engineer of the Mars Perseverance Rover Project, and Cooper is the planetary protection lead of the project. Visit tinyurl.com/yck52unk. UTPB presents Pagliacci. University of Texas Permian Basin will host a classic Italian opera this week with English narration. I, Pagliacci, or The Clowns, takes the stage at 7 p.m. today, Friday and Saturday, and 2:30 p.m. Sunday in the Ray Great House Recital Hall at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $16 for adults and $7 for students 12 to 18 or with valid college ID. Director David Corman stressed that the production is not suitable for young children, and there is an age advisory that is for children 12 and up. Corman is the director of the UTPB Vocal Ensemble, adjunct professor of voice, and music minister at First United Methodist Church in Odessa. He also will narrate the opera. Corman said there will be 40 cast members, including himself and Rochelle Woolston, an adjunct professor of voice and musical theater. I've sung both of the baritone leads and the tenor in my career, but then directing-wise, I did two Pagliaccis at Odessa College 10 years ago and then maybe 15 years ago, Corman said. Originally, Pagliacci was a one-act opera that was usually paired with other one-act operas in professional theater, Corman said. He added that it is one of the most performed operas in the world. Corman said he added about 30 minutes of music, so it's about an hour and 45 minutes. I've added music to the beginning to tell the story a little bit further, because the opera itself takes place in about 3 hours of time, so it kind of occurs. It's just like this fast thing that happens, so there's not like any pre-story. So I'm telling the pre-story in the beginning, he said. The opera is by Ruggero Leon Cavallo and is based on a true story from 1868. Leon Cavallo's father was a judge, and he heard a case where an actor killed his wife on stage. Corman said it premiered in Italy in 1892, 24 years after the original incident occurred in the Calabrian village of Montalto. It was a huge hit, made him super famous, but it's really his only hit, Corman said. This version takes place in 1930 in Mussolini's Italy. Because of this, it has music from George Gershwin, for example. It's like a Shakespearean tragedy, is what it is. It just happens to be set in opera. It's a kind of scope of meaning. If there's ever a piece about tragedy, this is it, Corman said. The piece is sung in Italian, but the narration is in English. Maja Johnson is the choreographer, and there will be orchestra and piano conducted by Jean Gomez Forinska, assistant professor and director of orchestral activities, Nicole Rougeau Vanderford, a senior lecturer in English at UTPB, is in charge of costumes. Jacob Corman, one of Corman's children, is playing Tonio, an evil clown. Ben Corman is playing Canio. Playing an evil character is almost kind of like a thrilling escape, Jacob Corman said. He added that he has been in many productions with his father and at the Permian Playhouse as well. Working with your family is a really great team effort. It's been really enjoyable. Sometimes you can't escape work when you're working with your family because you take it home with you, Jacob Corman said. But Jacob noted that the teamwork is like nothing else because you know these people, because they're your family. Corman said he has four children, Jacob, Ben, Grace, and Andrew. His daughter Grace portrays one of the clowns. So I have three of my four children in this production. I've got to say that's a blast, David Corman said. Odessa Prayer for Ukraine Vigil Concert. Odessa native and renowned gospel singer Rudy Gatlin will host a free prayer vigil and concert to show support for Odessa's namesake neighbors in Odessa, Ukraine, a press release detailed. The press release stated Gatlin will sing live in this free concert and vigil at the MCM Grande Hotel and Fun Dome, whose parent company, ICA, is donating the event venue and logistics. The event will start at 5 p.m. Saturday at the MCM Grande Hotel and Fun Dome, located at 6201 East Business 20. The First Baptist Church Choir is also slated to participate. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 37,213 total cases, 690 deaths. Midland County, 39,140 total cases, 494 deaths. Texas, 6,698,424 total cases, 86,987 deaths. U.S. cases, 79,648,566 total confirmed and 971,212 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. MCH COVID numbers. Medical Center Hospital has released its COVID inpatient numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Wednesday. Four COVID patients in-house. Med-surg non-critical, three COVID patients. Critical care, one COVID patient. Zero unvaccinated, one vaccinated, one unknown. Zero COVID patients on ventilator. 0 unvaccinated, 0 vaccinated, 0 unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients, 60 years old to 87 years old. COVID patients from outside Ector County, 1 from Midland, 1 from Monahans, 1 from Wink. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. Kids Pfizer Clinic. Ector County Health Department has scheduled a Pfizer vaccine clinic for kids age 5 to 11 at 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. today in Ireland Elementary Cafeteria, 4301 Dawn Avenue. First and second doses will be available. Parents or guardians must be present. Your child does not have to be part of ECISD to receive a vaccine. For more information, call 432-489-4141 or visit tinyurl.com/54TSK5SK. CBS 7, Cud sentenced to 2 months probation, $5,000 fine. According to Odessa American Media Partners, CBS 7, a Washington, D.C. district court sentenced Midlander Jenny Cud to 2 months probation and a $5,000 fine for her role in the January 6, 2021 Capitol riots. This information is according to CBS 7's CBS affiliate WUSA 9 in Washington, D.C. The federal government recommended that Cud be sentenced to 75 days incarceration, CBS 7 detailed. CBS 7 also detailed that Cud's defense team argued that Cud was a peaceful protester who did not deserve jail time. Court documents detailed on March 10th during a pre-sentence investigation report, Cud stated, "I did not realize at the time that I was breaking the law when I walked inside through open doors to the Capitol. When I said on TV that I didn't do anything unlawful, I genuinely meant that I did not believe that I did anything illegal. I am not trying to absolve myself of responsibility for the entering the Capitol, but I wanted the court to know that I did not know at the time I walked in." However, Cud pleaded guilty to one count of entering and remaining in a restricted building or ground on October 13th, 2021, a statement of offense detailed, "When the defendant entered the U.S. Capitol building on January, it was a restricted building. The defendant knew at the time she was entering the U.S. Capitol building and that she did not have lawful authority to enter the building." Court documents detailed, "The defendant was provided conflicting statements of fact to the government. The statement set forth in the PSR and in the defendant's sentencing memorandum are in direct conflict with the facts in paragraph 16 of the statement of offense as agreed to by the defendant. Since the defendant's knowledge at the time she entered the restricted building or grounds is an element, the government must determine whether it is appropriate to litigate a breach of the plea agreement." Superior Optimization celebrates 20 years of giving back. Superior Optimization marked its 20th anniversary by helping out at the West Texas Food Bank. On Wednesday afternoon, about 30 employees from the company came out to the West Texas Food Bank in Odessa to help hand out food in the distribution line. "There's not a lot of companies that make it 20 years," Superior Optimization Executive Chairman and co-founder Don Bennett said. "There are not a lot of companies that make it 5 years. To have that kind of longevity and dedication, we have people here who have been with us since the beginning. To have that kind of dedication is indicative of the great people in the Permian Basin. It's all about them rather than me." A presentation was held Wednesday afternoon at the West Texas Food Bank, Superior Optimization made a donation which will help the West Texas Food Bank provide 10,000 meals. The company provides automation, automation engineering, electrical and instrumentation control and technology solutions to multiple industries throughout Texas and the Gulf Coast region. Superior Optimization and the West Texas Food Bank go back a ways. Bennett donated the anchor gift for the 2012 capital campaign that helped the West Texas Food Bank build its facilities in Odessa and Midland. I met Don Bennett a little over 11 years ago, and to be honest, he was my first large donor of the West Texas Food Bank. West Texas Food Bank CEO Libby Campbell said he was our anchor gift donor who started the original campaign to build the two state-of-the-arts facilities that we have here in Odessa and Midland. They were both in the same campaign. Don was the first donor that truly, at a large level, believed in our dreams of building the facilities that we have today. Without him and that faith in us and our dreams, I don't know where we'd be. We couldn't do it without Don's belief. It's been amazing to watch the growth we've had and see Don still believing in us. He's been a huge influence in our community. For Bennett, giving back to the community has always been important. We're trying to give back to the community and realizing that it can be us in the food lines, Bennett said. The volunteer work from Superior Optimization began Tuesday night when a team volunteered in the evening to help put the boxes together at the West Texas Food Bank before being distributed Wednesday. Superior Optimization Director of Operations Drew Bicknell was one of the many employees out at the West Texas Food Bank helping out Tuesday and Wednesday. Last night we started with building some of the pantry boxes. I think we did about 600 boxes last night, which will go to 600 families, Bicknell said. Wednesday, we're handing out those boxes and some other produce to other families as well. Superior Optimization CEO Jesse Pletz also talked about the relationship between his company and the West Texas Food Bank. We thought, what better way to participate in the community than by coming out here and teaming up with West Texas Food Bank, Pletz said. Our company has a long-standing relationship with West Texas Food Bank. It was a natural opportunity for us to come here and celebrate our anniversary by giving back to the community. Ever since the new West Texas Food Bank facilities were built, Campbell said the number of people the organization has fed has increased. The need will increase with inflation rising. Since we've been here, we used to do 6.4 million pounds of food, but now we're able to serve 13.4 million pounds of food to the 19 counties that we're serving, said Campbell. Our need is definitely going up as inflation rises. We're seeing about 400 families at this location once a week and 300 at the Midland location once a week. Without corporate partners, we wouldn't be able to do what we do every day. To help out at the West Texas Food Bank or to donate, go to WTXFoodBank.org. YMCA will operate city pools this year. The Odessa City Council voted unanimously Tuesday night to approve a $495,000 contract for the YMCA to operate the city's aquatic facilities for 10 weeks over the summer. City Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton said two organizations bid on the contract and the Parks Advisory Board recommended the YMCA based on past successes. The other organization was from Georgia. Although the city had only budgeted $232,732 for the pools, Patton said the parks budget could fund the remaining portion. During last week's work session, Patton said the difference in cost pertained to labor. City Council members Mary Willis and Dietra White spoke in favor of the YMCA, with White saying she believes the city got burned last year by the company that received the contract. It went bad from the very beginning, White said. Patton said the council will receive a report at the end of the season, complete with expenditures, revenues, and attendance numbers. Council member Mark Mata abstained from the vote because his wife works for the YMCA. Pfluger leads letter urging USDA to provide wildlife relief. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, led a letter on Wednesday to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack urging the Department of Agriculture to utilize all tools at their disposal to assist producers affected by the devastating wildfires in Texas, a press release detailed. The letter was co-signed by Representatives Roger Williams, Judge John Carter, Ronnie L. Jackson, and Pat Fallon. In the letter, the members write, "The fires, which began on February 23rd, have resulted in the loss of lives and livelihoods in the communities we represent, destroying homes, small businesses, historic buildings, and agricultural operations. Texas producers will need additional resources to cover production losses. As you know, USDA and the Farm Service Agency, FSA, have the ability to expedite and prioritize emergency loans to producers covering from wildfire-inflicted damages. More resources are needed, and we thank you for timely attention to this request," Representative August Pfluger stated in the press release. "Yesterday, I traveled across our district to visit the firefighters, first responders, and community leaders who are working day and night to save lives and fight these vicious wildfires. The immense loss of livestock, cattle, crops, and homes is beyond heartbreaking. Although we are seeing an outpouring of support, more resources are needed. I will continue fighting alongside Representatives Roger Williams, Judge Carter, Ronnie Jackson, Pat Fallon, and others to secure relief for our communities." Woman convicted of stabbing sentenced to 10 years in prison. A 32-year-old woman was convicted by an Ector County jury of stabbing her boyfriend with a knife during an assault. Chandra Diane Johnson, 32, was convicted of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, on Tuesday. The 32-year-old woman was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Court documents show she received 362 days of jail time credit. The prosecutors for the state of Texas were Assistant District Attorneys Elizabeth Howard and Kevin Schultz, while Defense Attorney Joanna Curry represented Johnson. The presiding judge was John Rush of the 244th District Court. According to a previous Odessa American article, the assault happened March 26, 2021 at the America's Best Value Inn located at 3023 East Highway 80. The victim, identified as Marco Gonzalez, was lying on the sidewalk in front of room number 111, which is located in the northernmost part of the hotel, the press article stated. Gonzalez was lying on his stomach, and witnesses were applying pressure to the upper portion of his back to stop apparent bleeding. Gonzalez had a single cut located on the upper left portion of his back that was a 1 to 2 inch in length and at a diagonal angle to the spine, the previous article detailed. Gonzalez was transported to Medical Center Hospital, where he was treated for a collapsed lung as well as another penetrating trauma to the cut. Gonzalez was being provided medical aid by bystanders, as well as his girlfriend, identified as Johnson. Johnson stated she and Gonzalez were staying in room number 109 and that Gonzalez had been her boyfriend for 4 months. Officers reviewed security video footage that showed Gonzalez wearing a blue shirt and was standing outside of room number 109, speaking with someone within. The previous article stated, Gonzalez backs up and throws an unknown object at Johnson, who emerges from room 109. Gonzalez and Johnson continued to argue. Gonzalez throws a second item at Johnson before turning his back to her. The previous article details Johnson approached Gonzalez from behind. Gonzalez confronted Johnson and turned around again. At this time, Johnson, using her right hand to stab Gonzalez in the back. Gonzalez grabbed his back and collapsed to the ground. Johnson was detained at the scene and admitted under Miranda to stabbing Gonzalez with a small black knife during an argument over money.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.